You're listening to KRFC Fort Collins. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to Community at Work, a weekly program spotlighting the issues that affect our communities by providing a closer look at the agencies and nonprofit organizations that serve the public. I'm Julie Eslick, Communications Specialist for the Health District of Northern Larimer County. On this edition of Community at Work, I talk with Allison Williams, who is Policy Coordinator for Special Projects at the Health District. Allison analyzes proposed legislation and policy that affects the health of the community at the state and federal level. She makes presentations and updates to the Health District's Board of Directors for them to take positions on these issues. Once the board has taken a position, Allison may communicate and provide the analysis to legislators, testify at hearings, or work with other organizations. Welcome, Allison.
Hi.
Thank you for being an in-studio guest tonight. The 71st session was your first Colorado General Assembly as a policy coordinator for the Health District. Was that what you expected?
It was definitely a new experience, and you had to hit the ground running. Things move fast at the state level since there's only 120 days to get things done.
And let's start with some of the state bills that were designed to address a national epidemic. Opioid use and overdoses. Colorado ranks in the top 15 in the U.S. for opioid prescription misuse, and last year was the deadliest year for drug overdose deaths in the Centennial State. Can you tell us about some of the bills that passed?
Yeah, so six different bills came out of the Opioid and Other Substance Use Disorders Interim Study Committee that happened over the interim, so summer and fall of 2017. Five of these bills actually passed, and four of those five had been signed by the governor into law. These tackled issues ranging from harm reduction to increasing the behavioral health workforce, and coverage for treatment for substance use disorders, as well as many other things.
And which of these bills did the Health District Board vote to take a position on?
So the Health District Board took a position on five of these bills, including House Bill 1003, which the board supported, House Bill 1007, which the board supported, 1136, which was strongly supported by the board, and Senate Bill 22 and Senate Bill 40. Senate Bill 22, the board supported, but Senate Bill 40 was a little bit more nuanced of a position that we can get into later.
Okay, great. And one of the bills that I did you testify at any of the hearings that went on for the bills that the board district, that the board of directors had an interest in?
Yeah, so a staff member testified in strong support of House Bill 1136 at the House Committee on Public Health Care and Human Services. So House Bill 1136 had a broad bipartisan support. It was working on getting a waiver from the federal government to provide Medicaid coverage for inpatient and residential treatment, as well as detox services for substance use disorders.
And the residential treatment, that would be for, and you mentioned substance use disorders, so also for mental illness, or if somebody, or more just based
this,
around the behavioral and...
This is just for substance use disorders.
Got
it. Yeah.
Okay. And what was the response from lawmakers hearing from us?
Most of these bills have gotten broad bipartisan support, which is great because we can talk across the aisle with all of these different legislators. We testified, and then we also did a lot of communicating with our local policymakers on how important this bill is to Larimer County.
And one bill that I read failed to get enough votes would have created a supervised injection facility as a pilot program, I think in the Denver area, that's what they were looking at, and provide syringe access programs in hospitals to protect IV drug users from spreading illness or overdosing. What happened there?
So
in your analysis,
that is Senate Bill 40, and that is the nuanced position the board had. So they opted to strongly support the syringe access programs in hospitals. It creates a new avenue for getting clean needles, and it also took strong support for schools being allowed to have naloxone policies and stocking on naloxone, which is the overdose reversal drug. And then they decided to not take a position on the pilot program for supervised injection facilities. It's a controversial idea, but I think it was more because it's a pilot program and it wouldn't have been in Larimer County. It's in Denver, so it wouldn't have directly impacted our community at the time.
Sure. And the naloxone, having naloxone available, you mentioned in the schools. Are you talking about in universities or even in the Poudre School District? Or I didn't hear
it
about that.
Would have been for even the Poudre School District. Okay. So it would have been able for them to opt in. It's not an opt out. It's an opt in to decide to have a policy. And then the people that had access to it would have to be trained on using that drug.
Okay, gotcha. All right. And which components of I guess we just discussed which components of the bill. Do you anticipate similar bills coming up again in the future around the perhaps injection facilities sites or certainly the syringe access program out of the hospitals?
I think this will definitely come up again in future sessions. Many believe that harm reduction, such as syringe access programs and supervised injection facilities, are an important component of addressing substance use disorders and the opioid epidemic. It enhances public safety and improves access to other health and social services, but there is the concern that you're condoning the use of illicit drugs.
Okay. And health district staff, I know, is involved with planning some local events for International Overdose Awareness Day on August 31st. Among some of our other outreach programs and work with community partners. So I'm sure that you'll be also keeping an eye on any federal legislation around opioids.
Yes, there's a lot coming up.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KRFC Fort Collins, and this is Community at Work. I'm your host, Julie Eslick, Communications Specialist for the Health District of Northern Larimer County. Tonight we're talking with Allison Williams, the Policy Coordinator for Special Projects at the Health District. Before the break, we were discussing Colorado General Assembly bills addressing opioid misuse. Another hot national topic with local implications is freestanding emergency departments and how they figure charges for patients. These ERs outside of hospitals have cropped up in Fort Collins and around the state, and several made news when patients got unexpectedly huge bills. And some insurance companies, I understand, won't cover any services at these locations either. Can you explain that bill and how it should help consumers?
Yeah, so that's Senate Bill 146. It requires freestanding EDs to provide disclosures to consumers. So these specifically include like a sign when you're checking in to know that it is an emergency room and it's not an urgent care center. So there are additional fees that go along with that. It's also after making sure a patient doesn't have an emergency condition that they are given a sheet that shows what insurances are accepted, if they accept Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE, and then which private insurances they are in network with. So it just gives more of an idea to consumers what they're in for when it comes to bills, and then also requires them to list the charge master fee. So a charge master fee is sort of the highest end of what you can be charged for a service. So it has 25 most common services, and their charge master fees are mandated to be shown to patients. But it makes it a little difficult because there are federal laws regarding emergency medicine that have to be sort of navigated with things like this, and this bill does it very well.
Right, because if somebody comes into an emergency room and they have a true emergency, they have to be served. Isn't that correct? That the ER has to serve them. Then you have to figure out maybe the payment part later. But if I go in and I'm somebody that really should be at urgent care, like I live right behind now two emergency EDs like this that are separate, and the urgent care is a little bit farther away, so something might happen, turn an ankle or something like that, might go in there. Do they have to give people an option or suggestions of this isn't a true emergency, so you can go to the urgent care, you can go see your doctor, you don't have to be seen here, or no?
You cannot do that by federal law. Okay. It's called MTALA. You have to be screened for emergency condition if you present at an emergency room, no matter if they think it's not an emergency or not.
And that's probably to protect people that may have come in and maybe they can't pay, so they say, well, it's not really an emergency, where maybe it truly is.
Correct.
Something they need to be looked at. Oh, okay. That's good to know. Was that something, you may have mentioned this, but was that something that the health district did take a stand on? It sounds like something they might support.
Yeah, our board took a strongly support position on this bill because it does give consumers more disclosure of what they're getting into, but it doesn't dissuade them from accessing emergency care.
Sure. And did you interact with policymakers on this issue?
I did not testify on this issue, but we did communicate a lot with policymakers and shared our pro-con analysis on this bill widely on the issue, especially with local policymakers.
And so when you do that, you're just maybe sending a memo or something to a policymaker to say, here's kind of where we see the pros and cons.
Yeah, so I send them an email, and we have analyses that we give to the board, and we send the exact same analyses to the policymakers, and it shows the pros and the cons. And those analyses are used to create that strongly support position. So we sort of want to show why the pro points outweigh the cons.
Sure. And I know that we also keep that updated on our website. So if any folks are interested in anything we're talking about tonight, they can go to healthdistrict.org/legislative-and-policy-analysis. That's A-N-A-L-Y-S-E-S. And they can always call the Health District if you have questions. And that number is 970-224-5209. And I imagine either you, Allison, could answer some of those questions or route them to the right person.
Yes, I can.
Explain some of the reasoning behind what we're doing. And another bill that has potential impacts for many health district clients is the legislation around work requirements and time limits for those receiving Medicaid benefits. For listeners who don't know, Medicaid is a joint federal-state program that helps with medical costs for some people with limited income and resources. Individuals earning less than $16,040 a year or a family of four earning less than $32,718 a year may be eligible for Health First Colorado, which is our Medicaid coverage, which also includes limited dental benefits for adults. The Health District has a Medicaid and CHP Plus for Kids outreach project and offers enrollment services year-round through Larimer Health Connect. I'll also mention that our family dental clinic sees folks that have Medicaid coverage for their dental benefits, and also one of the only places in Northern Colorado that that provides a sliding scale fee to help people pay for their dental care. And Allison, are there other states like Ohio? I know is one that passed similar bills this year for Medicaid expansion recipients. Colorado was one of the states that expanded Medicaid benefits to more individuals under the Affordable Care Act during the Obama administration. So I don't know if the bills that were looked at were specific to Medicaid expansion recipients or just anybody that's been on Medicaid. What happened with the Colorado bill there?
So the board voted to strongly oppose this based on the fact that it was a broad work requirement for working age adults that were able-bodied, and their definition of able-bodied was pretty narrow. There weren't exceptions for people undergoing substance use disorder treatment or students. It was very narrow. The bill was postponed indefinitely, which is a nice way of saying it was killed in committee. The Senate Committee on Health and Human Services, it died 3-2, so it was a close vote. And it was after a three-hour hearing on just that one bill.
Wow. And when you say for students, are we talking about graduate students that maybe are either working or doing a fellowship or something but don't make a lot of money, but they're over the age that they can be covered under their parents' insurance?
Yeah, so say graduate students or just regular undergraduate students that don't have access to insurance, if they're under this bill, it would have been if they weren't working 20 hours a week that they would lose their coverage.
Okay. And now this bill didn't include somebody who maybe already had was on disability, you would say, or were not able to physically hold a job.
Yeah, so their definition for disability was a little bit more narrow, too. It was you had to be receiving federal disability benefits, so it was a very narrow definition of what a disabled was.
Wow, okay. All righty. And another policy issue that you've been following closely is prescription drug costs. How big of an impact could a law like that mandating drug manufacturers to give purchasers notice if they're increasing the list of a price, the list price of a drug? And do consumers really have much of a choice if their doctor prescribes a certain drug beyond, you know, checking to see if there's a generic version available?
So the reporting bill that you talked about, which is House Bill 1260, it passed the House but failed in the Senate. And such reporting could be beneficial to policymakers as they try and figure out a way to actually tackle drug costs, because it wouldn't probably have an immediate impact on those costs, but it would be able to provide more information on how those costs, what those costs are in Colorado and how they affect different portions of populations, which would be able to do a more targeted response to drug costs. Right now, the best way for patients, they can request a generic. That's always a possibility. But their other avenue is they can do research on different pharmacies. So they can go to one pharmacy, go to different websites such as like GoodRx.com, and it shows sort of what they'd pay for their drug at different pharmacies across Larimer County.
Like if I'm going to King Supers versus Walgreens or Walmart or whatever, Good Day Pharmacy or any of those?
Correct.
Oh, okay. And another consumer-friendly bill that Colorado legislators did pass was one that frees pharmacists to tell patients if there are cheaper drug equivalents or if paying cash out of pocket is less expensive than using insurance. So that sounds like a way then for folks to have some more information about, well, you know, King Super charges $4 for this particular drug, say, or what else would that bill entail?
So one thing about the gag clause is it would also allow pharmacists to have a better relationship with their patients, because they could tell them, hey, this drug with your copayment is going to cost $25, but if you pay the cash amount, it could cost $12. Mm. So it gives them that flexibility to be able to provide affordable alternatives of payment. Okay. And it also allows them to say there's a therapeutic equivalent that is cheaper that we could prescribe you instead. We could get a permission to prescribe you instead and dispense that to you. It also targeted things called clawbacks, which are overpayments. So a person pays a copayment to their pharmacist, and that goes in turn to the insurer or the pharmacy benefit manager for that insurance company. And an overpayment is if that copayment is in excess of what that drug actually costs for the insurer or the PBM, and they get to pocket that excess amount. So that this bill bans that, and it did pass, and it was had bipartisan support in both the Senate and the House, and it's a bill that the health district supported.
So you're telling me that if I pay a $75 copay for a medication that my insurance might only have paid $60 for, that they're maybe keeping the other 15 in the past?
Correct.
Oh.
Yep.
I'm learning a lot here. And you did mention that, so with the pharmacists, they're not acting like the doctor. So if I have a question about other medications, I might talk to my doctor. But if a pharmacist suggests something, they're not just going to change that prescription. They have to go back to your doctor. Your doctor has to give the okay to change that prescription.
Yeah, they can have that conversation, sure. Make sure that it's all exactly what the doctor wants, and they sure. didn't prescribe one medication over another because of a different thought or complication.
Sure. Or anything that might, conflict with another medication that you're on. Now that the second regular session of the 71st Colorado General Assembly has ended, where are you putting your energies now?
So right now, a lot of my energy is devoted to creating a little overview of pharmaceutical policy. So it sort of will create a background for the board for making decisions on drug costs. It's a very, very complex system. It seems so easy that a manufacturer makes it and then it goes to an insurer, pays for it for their covered individual. But it's not that easy. There's so many different types of prices and negotiated prices, and different insurances have different ways of negotiating prices. So it's just a complex process that I'm trying to make a little bit easier. So we'll get that to our board to look at, and then we'll be posting it on our website as well.
And so aside from the board will receive the report and it'll go to the website, are there other legislators that you might also send the report to, or we just kind of see where things go with new bills as they come up or where that might fit in?
It will probably go to our local policymakers, and whoever ends up being on those relevant committees come next session. The Senate Health and Human Services, House Health Insurance and Environment, and House Public Health Care and Human Services all have jurisdiction over those types of issues. Mm-hmm. So sort of getting it to them to sort of have a briefing before they start their session on what we think are relevant issues for pharmaceutical policy and sort of strategies that other states have taken to address that.
And within so for Larimer County, because you mentioned some of the committees that you work with, are there other committees that we more specifically work with as well, like other related to health and human services or even other ones related to other things that the health district might do? I'm just curious what you work with.
So mainly it is those three committees, but bills can be assigned to other committees. There are things known as kill committees in each house, and they're both the House and Senate State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. Some at the beginning of session, if your bill gets assigned there, it's likely to be postponed indefinitely. But so we look at those, and it depends on the issue. Sometimes the Speaker of the House or the Senate President decide to put things somewhere because they think that committee might be a little bit more friendly and they think the bill should pass out of committee. So it sort of just depends on the issue and tracking and making sure things are going where they're going and who's on each committee.
And was this session, I know that the fall session would have been your first, the fall and then the spring sessions were your first here at the Health District. And were there a large number of bills, like more bills than you might have thought, or based on people that have been in this position in the past? I know I go by your office and see always see lots of things on the board and where things are at, and it's a lot to track. But was there more than you thought, or more than usual, or?
There was overall in the entire session, there were more bills than usual. And there were more bills that were still alive towards the end of session than usual. But based for us in particular, we sort of narrowed down our focus and tried to make things a little bit more streamlined this year. So I didn't have to track as many and sort of narrowed down our priority ones as things that would significantly impact our community possibly when it comes to health. Or comes to special district operations, because not only am I working on health policy, I also have to track special districts policy because it's something that could affect our operations as a health district. So coming from a health background, I've learned a lot about tax policy and different things, and there's a lot coming up this summer for interim committees on both health issues and special district issues.
So when the when there's not a General Assembly in session, then they're still working. These legislators are still working year-round. They're just not sitting in session and voting on bills and things like that.
Correct. So the actual session voting on bills only goes from the beginning of January to the beginning of May, 120 days. So next year, I think it's January 4th to May 3rd. But in the off time, they are working. There are interim committees. There are year-round committees that they might be assigned to. So, for example, upcoming, there's a the Substance Use Disorder Interim Committee is coming back for another year, and there will be an interim committee on the Gallagher Amendment, which is a tax issue to the Constitution that we need that needs to be addressed for residential assessment rates.
And are there any federal bills that you're following currently on pharmaceutical drugs or on other issues?
Right now, I'm doing some of the tracking some federal bills on pharmaceutical drugs for my report, just sort of seeing what's out there and how the federal strategies are to tackle drug costs and seeing how they align with state strategies. I'm also tracking there's a lot of opioid packages coming out, both the House and the Senate. Energy and Commerce has some, Ways and Means from the House has some, and the Senate Help Committee, so Health and Education, Labor and Pensions Committee, has a bill that's coming out, a comprehensive bill. So sort of seeing what those are doing and presenting them to the board in the future to get a position on those. And then there's also the 2018 Farm Bill is being worked on. There's the House version has been released, and our board has taken a strong opposition position to this bill. But the Senate version has not been released, and the House version was voted on a couple weeks ago and failed, but they're going to bring it back up at the end of June.
And what was the board's issue there? Did that have to do with SNAP?
Correct. So the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which was formerly known as food stamps, there are a lot of new changes to that program that are would decrease benefits for a lot of people and put a lot of more work requirements on individuals accessing SNAP. And there are some reinvestments into work and training programs, but it's not sufficient for what needs to be put into a work and training program for those people to get really meaningful impact out of such a program. And it just doesn't take into account the interaction between food and health.
Right. Yeah. So when and how does the health district weigh in on some of these national health care policy issues? I know sometimes we go to DC, so how do we handle that?
So federal, doing more federal analyses is a newer thing for the health district. So we're sort of learning as we're going. This year we've actually done a few comments on insurance changes from the federal level. So short-term limited duration insurance plans. And also on association health plan regulation changes. So we've done some public comments on that, but we're sort of working on how we want to do analyses or communicate with policymakers and sort of working on our strategy for engaging at the federal level a little bit more.
Have you yet been able to go to Washington to sit in on any hearings or?
In my past positions, that's all I did when I lived in D.C. But now I have not done it for this position, but I've spent a lot of time watching them and watching votes on C-SPAN for the past couple weeks since the state session ended. My focus has been a little bit more on the federal stuff.
And what was your previous position before you came to the health district?
Before I got my master's, I was living in D.C. and I was a legislative intern with the Food Research and Action Center. So my last big thing was working on the 2013 Farm Bill. So it's deja vu all over again.
And did you return to Colorado for your graduate work? Or?
No, actually, my husband was in the active duty, so we were moving around a lot the past 3 years, and he has left active duty. So I grew up in Colorado, decided to move home and sort of do something where I feel state work is a little bit more impactful than federal because things move faster and more things get done at state level, and it's sort of an innovation center for policies.
And Colorado in particular, did you like some of what you had seen in Colorado or in Larimer County with what's happening with some of the legislation?
In Colorado, although there have been reports saying we're the most partisan General Assembly in the country, I think that is not true. It's bipartisan work is what gets real change done. Across the aisle, there have been big bills this year. Like all of the substance use disorder bills are big bills. They're not meaningless. They are strong bipartisan bills that get change for people in Colorado. And I think having things at the state level, it might be fast and it might be a little crazy, but things are a little bit more meaningful. Yeah. And party doesn't mean as much as getting things done for the people of Colorado.
Yeah. Great. And that's all the time we have for this evening. If you want to read the Health District Board of Directors' positions on the 2018 healthcare legislation and healthcare policy, you can go to healthdistrict.org/legislative-and-policy-analysis. For questions about policy analysis and board positions, you can contact Allison Williams at 970-224-5209. Thank you to Allison for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Community at Work. Critter Patter is up next here on KRFC 88.9 FM, where we entertain, inspire, and inform Northern Colorado's community radio. Have a great night.